I was coming from Montgomery. I had my guitar on my back. When this stranger stopped beside me in an antique Cadillac. He was dressed like 1950, half drunk and hollow-eyed. Say, it's a long walk to Nashville, would you like to ride? I sat down in the front seat, turned on the radio. Them sad old songs coming out of them speakers was solid country gold. Then I noticed the stranger was ghost white pale when I asked him for a light. I knew there was something strange about this ride. He said, "Drifter, can you make folks cry when you're playing sign? Have you paid your dues? Can you moan the blues? Can you bend them guitar strings? Boy, can you make folks feel what you feel inside? If you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride."
Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined, as always, by the legend Les Thatcher. And Les, I know that it is very cold, especially in most of the Northeast, and even big parts of the Southeast have had snow and ice over the last couple of days. But I got to tell you, despite the fact that it's about 7 degrees here in New York City this morning, I'm a very happy camper. I'm almost actually warm and toasty, thinking about spending 4 days in Charlotte, North Carolina this
morning. Yeah, you've got your reservations and you're all set to go, right?
I am good for the Charlotte Fan Fest.
Well, I'm sure I'll have my reservations before. I'm sure Greg's taking care of all that. I'm looking forward to it. I really, and I saw something tweeted too from him that they're going to do an actual physical wrestling Hall of Fame sort of thing in Myrtle Beach.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's what he said. I've never been to the one in New York. I've met Tony Villano, who is just a really nice guy and has put so much of himself and his own finances and everything into the New York Hall of Fame. And I know from two of my co-writers on the training manual, Harley and Steamer, who both have rings from up there, Paul Orndorff, who I got to sit down with and talk with for the first time at the Southeastern reunion at the Knox County Fair in Knoxville back in the summer, who also has a ring. I want a ring from there, too, to be quite honest about it. I do. I think I got it. I think I've earned it. But anyway, they do a class presentation up there and everything. And, I always thought, we're talking about, I know this is not the subject of the day. We got a lot of things to talk about. I always thought that Gatlinburg might be a good place, too, because, professional wrestling in the Southeast has been so strong. I mean, even today, you can actually sell professional wrestling, not sports entertainment, not circus stuntman acts, but professional wrestling in the Southeast, and people get into it. I think we'll talk about that briefly from the Memphis fiasco of last Sunday night. As my friend Jim Cornette said, they don't buy fucking sports. Yes, they're quiet. They buy wrestling. Anyway, I'm always like Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge, that area, because it's such a tourist attraction. And Myrtle Beach may be the same. I never thought about Myrtle Beach as in terms of, a Hall of Fame. But I'm more interested. I think Greg had posted that Mike Mooneyham is going to do a column on what they're planning on doing there. And I know Greg is going to start running. Calling it live from Myrtle Beach. Some shows out there, I guess, on a monthly basis. So good luck to him on that. And I'm really anxious to talk to him and see what the hell's up.
I've seen those live from Myrtle Beach things on Twitter. I did not realize that was Greg Price.
Yeah, that's Greg's gimmick or deal or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, very cool.
Or at least he's part of it. I don't know. If he has partners, or it's all on him, or what the exact situation is. But yeah, he is involved at least.
Well, then best of luck to our man Greg Price on that endeavor. I hope it really works out, and I'm interested to see Mike Mooneyham's column detailing this Wrestling Hall of Fame for Myrtle Beach. I'm excited now. You got me into it.
Hey, my gosh, I got you. I turned you on, right? Well, what's turning the wrestling community on this week? Lord knows.
Well, there's definitely a couple of things I want to get your opinion on, one of which is the fascinating piece Dave Meltzer wrote in this week's Observer regarding the decision to go with Roman Reigns over Daniel Bryan. But we're going to save that for just a few minutes from now. Instead, I'd like to touch on, as we get going here, the Memphis thing that you just referenced a second ago about Jimmy Cornette, and they buy professional wrestling as opposed to sports entertainment. Fastlane, WWE Fastlane, was held in Memphis this past Sunday. There's only one particular thing that I really want to talk about here, because it got my attention again on Twitter. But, you know, the show's been run down 8 Ways to Sunday already on the site. So I'm sure you can check out some very good reviews from Brian and Dave.
A young man who interned with me from Mount St. Joe College here, and who's become a very dear friend, and was a great asset to me at HWA for a long time, and even for the other owners after I sold it. Logan Cummings, who's now based in Chicago, had said he wanted to get my feedback on Bella's costume. What did she have on that I should have seen?
The Bella's costumes?
Yeah, or her, the way she was dressed on the show and the match.
I tell you what, I will have to take a look at that.
I bet you will.
My memory.
You horny.
Well, it's called research, Les.
Okay. Isn't it amazing the things you can do in the name of research?
Research, that's right.
But anyway, so I assumed that it was something, I don't know what I assumed it was, you know, what, or whether it was just some stupid or goofy that he, you know, wanted to hear. He likes to hear me go off, and but anyway, I just wondered if you knew. So anyway, moving right along, where is it we're going?
I'll tell you what, I will do some research after I ask you this question.
I bet you will.
I promise you I will, as a matter of fact. But I was checking out Twitter late Sunday night, and there was someone who is well-versed in professional wrestling, but like me, not a professional wrestler, is not drawn a check in the industry per se, who was watching the show and tweeted this regarding the Goldust-Stardust match, which was, by all accounts, a fine professional wrestling match, but something the crowd was not into for whatever reason on this night at all. And they tweeted this: "I've never been in a ring, but I've watched a lot of wrestling. You would think you'd pick up the pace if you lost the crowd, not slow down." To which someone who I know was a former wrestler responded to that tweet and said basically picking up the pace is a rookie mistake. So this person asked them to explain, because what was happening between Goldust and Stardust was clearly not getting over. Now, I don't know if that wrestler explained it or not. I did not see a response to that question, but I figure, Les, this is a pretty easy one for you to knock out of the park and spend a few minutes explaining why it's important when the crowd may not necessarily be into what you're doing, not necessarily to pick up the pace. Not the greatest idea, right?
No, it's not. And like he says, it's say that I see this and something I preach, and yes, I do preach the gospel according to professional wrestling, is that, you know, I see this on indie shows sometimes, you know, the experts who are on the internet all the time and denounce everything and know that they know better than anybody else and that sort of thing, will tend in a match that they're not happy with for whatever reason. It certainly doesn't have to be because they actually know why they're not happy or the fact they're just trying to be a pain in the ass. But, you'll hear one of these people, start a boring chant or something, and immediately, the kids are so intimidated by that they jump up and start running spots. You know, my question to those kids has always been, did one of these guys book the show? What do you mean? You know, because that's all you're getting there is they're running the show, and they're not, nor should they be. And please don't misunderstand that to say that I don't mean that our job is to entertain those who buy tickets. It is, but you know, it's I don't tell my doctor how to treat me. I may disagree sometimes because I don't like the treatment, but I certainly don't stop and tell him, well, you need to do this or do that. Or I don't tell my plumber how to work on my, you know, my plumbing and that sort of thing. Years ago, what we would have done, what I have done, what I've seen other guys do, is take a headlock and sit down. And when you get tired of being a jackass, I'll go back to work. I'm not, you know, I didn't pay to get in here. I'm being paid to be here. And that was our stance. Now, Here's the thing, too. I'm sure that Dustin is well-versed in how to call a match on the fly. Whether his brother is or not, I have no clue. I would assume, having trained with Rip Rogers and OVW stuff, he and Danny Davis and Cornette and that crew, he would at some point in time have that pushed on him, whether he, you know, took advantage of it or didn't, and actually learned, I don't know. But, you know, you and I, as an example, could have a great match in Cincinnati tonight on a big, on a show, and just blow the roof off the place. We take that same match 100 miles up the road to Columbus, or even 50 miles up the road to Dayton tomorrow night, and the people sit on their hands. So, you know, this thing of laying everything out in the back, step by step by step, like a jigsaw puzzle, as we, some of us call it paint by numbers, the cheap paintings, not the Rembrandts, is that you know, even if that's what the company says, that's what you're paid to do, is lay this out in the back. Okay, I got you. But you better be able to shift gears out there if necessary, because there are, you know, like this, there are times that people aren't going to buy what you're selling. It's quite a simple thing. But just jump up and start running to 50 miles an hour at 9,000 high spots, no. Absolutely not. Maybe pick the pace up. Now, when you say pick the pace up, that, again, this is not a circus act or a spot fest, although I see that on a lot of shows all the time. But that's not what it's meant to be, and that's not what I'm suggesting. But I am suggesting to shift gears. Try something different. However, if you don't know how to do that, you know, I would be remiss in critiquing this as though I'd seen it, because I quite frankly have not. I did not see the pay-per-view, and nor the, you know, sometimes I most time I'll catch a rerun from somebody, but I haven't seen it at all. I've just been too many things going on, family-wise here and that sort of thing. But, so yeah, you need to be able to shift gears and, you know, change your pace, change what you're doing. I'm going to guess, off the top of my head, first of all, that the people just weren't interested in seeing brother against brother because, you know, quite frankly, I don't know that I thought it was developed all that amazingly well. You know, when it comes, don't call me Dustin, don't call me Cody. And I mean, brother matches, for the most part, brother against brother, aren't amazing. You know, okay, Owen and Brett would be a example of the exception, not the rule.
But they also had the World Wrestling Federation Championship in the midst of that feud.
Sure. And realize, too, that with Dustin and Cody, these guys, you know, they're not considered, when I say they're not considered, Dustin is probably technically one of the best workers in that friggin' company and understands the ebb and flow of a match and what to go out there and do. Now he's selling a character and that's what he's paid to do. But you wash his face, put him in a pair of rest, you know, make him Dustin Rhodes, and he can go out there and go with the best of them. Technically, he's as sound as anybody there. You know, but I think part of it was that the people just aren't interested in seeing Dustin and Cody kick each other's butts. But yeah, you need to be able to shift gears. You need to be able to try things. You know, I years ago, I don't care if we're going 30 minutes or an hour or going 15 minutes. We knew the finish. If it was three falls, we knew three finishes. But the match, the rest of the match, what it put, you know, let's say you were going 30 minutes, one fall. You might know the build to the, to put the finish together to get to the final result may fill 2 minutes of that 30. The other 28 are on you and the guy you're in the ring with, to go out there and feel the crowd. Not, you know, that's a misunderstanding too. I think when you say listen to the crowd, that doesn't mean when an idiot yells boring, you jump up and start running high spots. That doesn't mean somebody tells you kick him that you kick him. That doesn't mean you do 10 punches because that's five past what the referee should have disqualified you on, because you get the again, this is not sing-along, you know. Audience participation is not your forte. It's not your responsibility between bells. your responsibility is to build a meaningful match and tell a story. You know, and so, you know, it's, and Cornette was right, too. That city is accustomed to flat-out good professional wrestling. And some craziness, too. Listen, Jerry Jarrett, who I respect a lot, who is a personal friend, you know, has put some goofy shit out there over the years. But he hasn't, that hasn't been the majority or the vast, largest amount of what they sold, you know. It was competition. Somebody wanted to kick somebody else's butt. And, again, I think part of the disinterest was the fact that nobody, you know, again, the brother things aren't big, whether you like it or you don't like it. And, second of all, you know, I don't think, especially with these two brothers, that it was, you know, when I hear it talked about on the internet and you know, for how many weeks now you heard somebody, well, I think they're going to run, you know. But it's not like, man, I can't wait to see that match. You know, nobody says that. I mean, the experts, the neophytes, or anybody. So I think that was part of the problem. But, yes, you don't start running high spots because somebody is disinterested. Example, one of the matches that I use today, training, and I've shown since I've been back here in the city and working with these kids for, Christ, I don't know what, 6 weeks now, maybe six weeks. We've looked at Benoit Riegel from the Pillman Show several times. And anybody that wants to be worth a damn as a professional worker, I use the phrase worker, not necessarily a professional wrestler, need to watch that match over and over and over and over again. Because you know, between that one in the year 2000 and now, I haven't seen many of those, and we should. But what I was going to say is, if you turn the volume up on that, you'll hear some boring chants at the initial beginning, and you also will hear, because Benoit was over like $1 million, you'll hear him getting a rousing reception when he comes to the ring, and Riegel, mediocre, because Riegel had been out of the mainstream for like 18 months at the time. He'd been in rehab, and then he was down in Memphis working with developmental. So, you know, he wasn't hot. But 23 minutes later, he was smoking hot. They set their own pace. They told the story. They wrestled their match, not what some idiot in the audience was, you know, chanting boring. Everybody in the dressing room was out pushing each other out of the way to get a better view of this. My old butt had worked my way from the soundboard, which was maybe 25 yards or more from the ring down to the ring apron. If you watch this thing, you'll see me jump up on the apron at the end and hug Benoit, because I could just feel it building, and so could the boys. And but they were the conductors. They played the symphony to their pace and stayed their course and built a hell of a match. And instead of a few boring chants at the end of this thing, you had 2,000 people on their feet. And Riegel looked at the lights, and they were chanting, Riegel, 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 because he had done such an amazing job of putting Chris over, and Chris had done such an amazing job looking like making Riegel look like he might have won this damn thing. That, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, is the art of professional wrestling. It is not 15 super kicks or 95 dives through the ropes. That is a match. And that's, you know, that's what this business is about. Dr. Tom will tell you the same thing. We were there, and we talk about this match. This is a match that we hope to use in the video sessions in Charlotte come the summer, because we want to add that to the Q&A session, some videos to pick apart and tell the kids, you know, this is what you should be doing instead of what you're doing. And we both get chills. I mean, it was just such an amazing friggin' match. I was talking to Mike Johnson from the other website, right? And he's, you know, he was there. That was where he and I first met in the year 2000. And he will tell you that when he hears somebody mention that match, he feels it. You had to feel it if you were in that building. And that's the way it should be.
So the best advice you could give to someone, young wrestler, who hears those boring chants would be more or less to stay the course, have confidence in who you are and what you have to offer?
Well, realize, first of all, realize this. the Gettysburg Address, one of the greatest political speeches of all time. And yet, history tells us that Abe Lincoln thought he had laid a huge egg, because at the end of that address, the people just were quiet, right? But yet, it, as I just said, was one of the greatest political speeches of all time. So it's not, people don't have to be jumping up and down and waving their arms and chanting yes or chanting no or chanting kiss my ass or anything to mean that you've done your, you know, if they are paying attention, if they are into it to the point where they're sitting forward on their seats waiting for the outcome, that's as good or as important and maybe more so than having them sing along, you know, audience participation. But here's the thing. You need to be versatile. That's the point. And you need to try different things. Now, I'm not saying don't run a spot. Work, you know, tell a story. Build, you know, go build a hold, take a hold. Last night, I had two of my kids in the ring. I said, okay, I told one of them, you take a headlock and listen to me. And I called spot after spot after spot, just off, and they kept going back to the headlock. And when they were done, I said, okay, you filled 6-7 minutes. You have kept going. We have never run the same spot twice, and yet you keep ending up back with a headlock, and we're telling it, and it's a story. You know, and I said, now, you can do something in front of this, you do something after this, because the other guy would have, you know, would have been the heel, basically. And but I said, here's the deal. You don't have to run 150 miles an hour and do 4,000 pop-ups, jump-ups, round-offs, dives, planches, topes, mopes, whatever pays, or what is Doc? I forget what Doc calls him. Anyway, to have a good match, you know. But I would have the guy, when a guy got the headlock back, he would do the headlock takeover, work the headlock. They worked it. You know, the guy in the headlock might roll him back onto his shoulders and get a one count. He'd come back up, but they're working. The guy in the headlock struggling to get out. They work their way back to the feet. The guy with the headlock takes him over again, work their way back up. I've called the spot. They run the spot. So you have to be able to shift gears. You have to be able to try things and see what the people were popping for. We had a little free show over there about a month ago, and a couple kids up from Tennessee. We put them in the main event because they were the more experienced of the group of kids that were here that Saturday. And they were so intent on giving me wrestling, right? But and they did. They started out, you know, very solid and very, you know, on a slower pace. And they hit this one high spot, and the people popped. But they didn't catch it. I caught it. And I'm saying, okay, now's the time to start building to the spot and building intensity, building momentum, and accelerating toward your finish. In other words, you know, good sex, good wrestling match. Start with foreplay and build the climax. And but they didn't sense that. And that's the one thing that we talked about later and looked at on tape, and they said, yeah, okay, we understand. When you realize you popped the crowd with that, they weren't, nobody was chanting boring, nobody was stomping their feet and clapping their hands or going to the bathroom. They were watching the build to this particular spot, and once they hit the spot, they got a good reaction from it. The crowd came up with them. They settled back in, but they never took that, you know, took the initiative and went there again. And they should have. So that, yeah, you got to listen to the people, but you are the conductor of this orchestra, and you are the one that should run the show.
Now, your friend who wanted you to comment on Nikki Bella or the Bella's outfits, what was his name again?
Logan Cummings.
Logan, I want to thank you, my friend.
Okay, so I was right, weren't I?
Who knew research would be so enjoyable? So the word for the day at Fastlane, Les, was black and gold outfits, but not too much black, not too much gold, not too much outfit.
Listen, I don't know if Logan thinks that I'm, because I'm old, I'm numb, or what. I am not adverse to sexy women. And, you know, I'm most assuredly am not. But if they, you know, if they can't do the job they're supposed to do, to me, you know, if you can't work, Sable was a beautiful woman. There is no two ways about it. And at her, and when she made her first appearances, realized too, she was way ahead of her time, right? I mean, women weren't dressed like that or weren't, in wrestling shows. But the my thing is this: when she showed that she wasn't technically capable, and I don't mean she had to be Chris Benoit or Ronda Rousey or anything in between. To me, that takes away from the sensuality. Now, I can't say that does it for everybody, but it does it for me, and I'm sure there are other people that probably feel the same way. So I'm not adverse. Logan, if you're listening, I'm not adverse to sexy women or being dressed sexy. I'm just adverse to you if you can't slap your ass with both hands. And
I'll be happy to do that for her.
Well, I'm sure you would. I'm sure I was. If I were young, I'd probably say the same thing. But again, I think a lot of those girls, their lack of, well, especially because I enjoy watching technical wrestlers. I have enjoyed watching numerous ladies over the years that may not have been pretty, but were talented in the ring. I've also watched some that were pretty and talented in the ring. But to me, if you're not technically qualified to be out there, then that takes away from your sensuality as far as I'm concerned.
Well, Logan, I can't speak for the match, but I can tell you that I thoroughly approve of the outfits. And I'll make sure I get you a link, Les, so you can weigh in, because I know you are a fashion maven.
I am. I have to be careful what I say. I saw somebody had tweeted a couple weeks ago. I heard Les Thatcher say playa, and I'm going to bed. I thought, my God, talk about an impact from a statement.
that meant it was great. He couldn't handle it. It was awesome.
Anyway.
Before we move forward, Les, to get to the meat of today's show, which is about Dave's article in the Observer.
Speaking of the fellas, let's get to the meat of today's show.
I do want to take this opportunity to say hello to everybody who might be listening to us for the first time for a couple of reasons. Number one, there was a very interesting special to join the site in the last week that I know a lot of people took advantage of. So if you're checking us out for the first time as a result of being a new subscriber, thank you. If you're checking us out for the first time because you are listening to this show for free today, as it is free for all, I want to remind you that you should get in on this great deal that's being offered as well. There's lots of great opportunities to become a subscriber to F4W Online or WrestlingObserver.com, and there's lots of great reasons. Not only do you get this show, this is one of 12 to 15 different podcasts over the course of the week, several of which feature the great Dave Meltzer, who, of course, puts together the Wrestling Observer newsletter, and Brian Alvarez of Figure Four Weekly. You also get access to the archives for every one of these podcasts, which means there's over 6,000 hours of audio in the F4W Online archives, which, by the way, is more content than is currently available for $9.99 on the WWE Network.
I knew you'd get around to that $9.99 before the day.
And then, of course, you also get an opportunity to check out both newsletters, the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Figure Four Weekly newsletter, and their archives as well, which go back many, many years. So there's tons of content available to you on this site, and we hope that you'll listen to the show today and be interested enough to check it out, because there are lots of different subscription options for you to take advantage of that opportunity. And I also want to point out, Les, that I got a message from our good buddy and the man from whom this program is named, Doc Young, this week. And I did not mention this last week, and I apologize, because, you know, we're moving towards the big 10th anniversary special here for Wrestling Weekly, which is coming up in May. Hard to believe that this show has been on the air in various incarnations for 10 years. But as a result of that, you know, there's a few little goodies being planted here and there on the message board at F4W Online, and some fun pictures and some other things from Wrestling Weekly history, one of which is a picture I'm going to put up in this week's thread, Les. I don't know if you remember this, but there's a very interesting photo of you and Doc from the movie Clerks.
Oh, yeah, I remember him photoshopping that and putting it out there. I was also going to say that I cut and paste guy, the thing, somebody at Raw had held up a sign.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. Doc and Les, or something. You know, you could see it. It was behind the guys in the ring work. And yeah. And I wanted to say, too, in my sarcastic way, that if you're listening, you know, thanks for listening. Even if you're listening to find out, is Les Thatcher as stupid as the experts on the internet say he is? I mean, that's okay, too. just keep doing it. That's it. Whatever. Yeah, it's 10 years, man. That's a long time. Am I profound or what? I mean, come on. I stopped to think about it. I thought, wow, you know, when he first brought that up, you know, back to start of the first, around the first of the year, talking about that, I thought, really? Doesn't seem that long. And you realize how complexion of the business has changed as well. I mean, there were times, you know, now you talk about virtually anything and everything, and there were back times back then that you were, didn't just open up and you know, talk about this, that, and the other thing, finishes and one thing and another. I was amazed, too. I remember back then we had some guys on using four-letter words, and I just wasn't accustomed to it. I mean, I didn't want really to get away with saying that. Oh, my God, you know. I realized the Internet, you can say virtually anything and get away with it.
Oh, yeah, it turned old Thatcher into a sailor.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I still kind of try. I'm still a little guarded with that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not a prude. Anybody that knows me well knows that's the case. I sometimes, of course, my youngest grandson is 8. Or my youngest grandchild. Well, no, my youngest is my great granddaughter, who's about 3 and a half. But you know, I always took the stance, well, you know, if one of my grandchildren are listening to this, I don't want, you know, I'm not interested. I'm not a prude, but, you know, I'm not interested in educating them in the world of the vulgar language. And they'll get to that soon enough without my help. You know, that's like with Facebook. I don't use four-letter words on there, although there are times that I am very tempted to do that, but it's mostly, you know. And then I think, well, Christ, my like one of my oldest granddaughters used worse language than I do on there. So it's like, who am I covering for? I don't know. But yeah, it's been a long time. But you know what? It's I'm used to getting panned, although it doesn't excite me any. You know, I still haven't learned to roll with it sometimes, but. It's been a lot of fun working with Doc, working with you, working with a lot. We've had a lot of good guests, and we have to have the other angry younger old man on again real soon, at Lance Storm, who is maybe the only other person that gives a shit on this site whether professional wrestling is professional wrestling or not, other than myself. and you too, Vic. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to exclude you from that elite company.
Oh, well, thank you.
You're welcome. Anyway, we digress or go in another direction or something. What are we going to talk about next?
More swearing, actually.
Swearing?
Well, kind of, sort of.
Okay.
Because there were a lot of people, I'm sure, swearing by the time that Fastlane show was over on Sunday, because Roman Reigns was, in fact, headed to a one-on-one match with Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. Not here to talk about the match, debate the merits of it, yada, yada, yada. Again, Fastlane was reviewed plenty of times on the site. It's more about the piece that Dave Meltzer wrote in this week's Observer.
First of all, go ahead and crow and tell the people that you beat me.
You were soundly defeated last week in the pay-per-view prediction game. No, actually, you were very good. You were 5-2, and I was 6-1. The difference was, let me check the list here, you took Brian and I took Reigns, and that was the difference between us. And I'm keeping a running tally this year. I don't know what, but for the end of the year, we should have like a prize to who has the best winning percentage. But
yeah, and Doc and Brian and Dave can all chip in and pay for it, by God.
I like that idea.
But I do,
after,
too.
After two pay-per-views, we're tied. We're both 9-4.
All right. Yeah, well, you know, I picked the guy who should have won, and you picked the guy who you knew was going to win. So
yeah. Unfortunately so, at least in my personal opinion. But
right.
This piece that Dave wrote, there's so many ins and outs and nuances of it. It goes back into some of the great territorial history of the business, talking about some of the lessons learned by legendary Houston promoter Paul Bosch, stories of Vince McMahon himself, and whether Vince is just so married to the idea that, well, I put Brock over The Undertaker last year with the idea that Reigns was going to be coronated as the one who beat the one in 21-1, and what better way to begin his ascent as the face of the company, and so married to that plan that all of the other things that pointed towards Daniel Bryan, he was more than willing to ignore. And there's a whole lot of other bits and pieces to the article, Les, and I was just curious to get some of your overall thoughts, and then I'll ask you a few more specific questions about it as we move along.
I know you sent me an email and said, this, please, please, please read this. This is a must read. And let me say this. I do read a lot of articles by different people. I say a lot, but I also have another life that I try to live. When I start making a complete living from doing these talk shows, then I'll start spending more time reading all this stuff or listening and whatever. But I did go to the site and read this article, and it's about how to, you know, people that you expect to get over, don't people you don't expect to get over do, you know. And the crazy thing is, it all comes down to several things. One is, one thing I've learned in 55 years in this business is you better be flexible. Because the best laid plans of mice and men, you know, the match that you think should blow the roof off the place doesn't. The guys you expect to get over don't. And if you're just locked in, then you're jerking yourself around. I mean, it's, you know, and you're probably costing yourself money at some point. A little example at a much lower level. When the Island Boys came to me, that would have been Rosie and Umaga, Eddie and Matty. With their size and their, you know, both of them look mean as sin, although, you know, Matty is one of the sweetest guys of all time. I said, okay, these guys are heels. And I don't even, I was trying to think when I knew we were going to talk about this, I don't remember that the babyface team that I put them with in their first appearance on an HWA show. But you know what? The fans like them. Why? I have no friggin' idea. And when I say that, I don't mean that in a derogatory manner. I just don't know. But you know what? The next time they came out, they were babyfaces. I thought that, you know, there's no sense going against the tide. And again, I don't, you know, I run my shows. Nobody, you know, but I do listen and try to pay attention and try to make things happen that are beneficial to the company as well as beneficial, you know, to the performers and to myself. But, you know, that's the one thing, like I said, you better learn to be versatile because, there's no such thing as a locked in, this is the end result deal. There just isn't in this business, or at least none that I've ever seen. And I've worked with many, many, many great bookers that aren't, you know, that are far more talented than the people writing this stuff. And yes, for all those of you who, I know Vince has the final say, so please, if the writers are your brothers, sisters, or mothers, or whatever, you know, I understand, let's don't get into that. Even they, you know, you throw things out there. I was telling somebody this again, I probably said it on this show. One of the things I always remember, Jim Crockett Sr., who I have a lot of respect for, I respect the entire family, I enjoyed working with him, but with Senior, I remember him telling the story of how precarious your ideas can be in terms of promotion. And the story was that he had, this would have been back in the 50s, I guess, or maybe 1960, I don't remember the exact. But anyway, at this time, television-wise, the show Lassie was red hot, as was the show The Lone Ranger. And so Jim thought, okay, this is cool. I can make a bunch of money with this because what I will do is have Lassie and The Lone Ranger on a Sunday afternoon matinee show in the Charlotte Coliseum. And man, we're going to turn people away because these are two, you know, ratings wise. I mean, you know, viewer, the two hottest shows in town. You've got kids, you've got adults. It's matinee. You know, church is out. Family has no place to go. You know, man, we're going to do great business. They lost their butt. Why? I don't know. Jim didn't know either. Never figured it out. But I'll never forget that story. You know. And so it's and the thing with Reigns, I've said all along, he's got a great look. He's got a great upside. But Roman wasn't built in a day, or nor was Rome or Les or Vic or anybody else. You know, it's and again, I've said this a couple times. When Brian came back, there I would have leaned in that direction and given Reigns time to mature. And you know what? The smart thing was once you and turning Reigns is stupid. I mean, this, you know, you're a babyface this week and a heel next week and a week after, 2 weeks after that, you're a babyface again is just counterproductive. Spell it, write it in capital letters. It is counterproductive. It is of no value to the company. You lose, fans, lose their edge with that. The guys lose their value in terms of being able to draw. What I would have done is work some little deal, and I don't have, you know, I didn't sit here and put this on paper, and I, you know, but just a rough idea is if Reigns and Daniel Bryan, if you had a couple solid heel tag teams, if you put these guys together, then Daniel Bryan's popularity will rub off some on Roman Reigns, along with Reigns' look and the way that I'm sure the girls are, you know, are gaga over him. And you can then Reigns helps cover Bryan's back, which gets him over even a little bit more. You go ahead and run Bryan through a series with whether it's Brock Lesnar or whoever the hell your heel champion is at that point in time or babyface, whatever. And then at somewhere down the road at the right time, then Reigns becomes the guy, and he has Bryan's not this pandering please. Like this guy because we need him to sell tickets thing, but you get my point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the thing to me. What that would have been, you know, the way I would have played it out. But you know, I'm going to do this because I want to do it. It's just crazy. You know, it's not productive in the least. And like I say, I write my shows, but I'm also able to make adjustments, and they should be able to do that as well. And I think,
let me ask you something about that. I apologize for the interruption, but there's a paragraph that sticks out at me in this piece, and I like to just read it briefly. It's only a couple of sentences, and get your take on that because it has something to do with what you were just saying. Dave wrote, "Really, I'd rather somebody wrote a book from start to finish, rather than readers who have no real understanding of book writing, trying to force changes, so the little sidekick who's supposed to be a bit player gets the girl, and not the handsome lead who the whole book was built about." I get his point. I see it. If you ask me whether or not I agree with that on its face, I'd say yes. And that idea is not written the same way, but it's repeated throughout this piece a couple more times. But you just talked about being able to adjust. My thing is, you know, to me, there's a real struggle there, and I'm not sure where the line is, but there's an idea where, you know, in theory at least, the promoter should know better than the fans, right?
Right.
And he has an idea of where he wants to go, and the people are telling him something that's diametrically opposed to what he wants. Where's the give and take? Where's the line there? Where do you go in some situations, this is what we're doing and I'm not bending from it, or when do you say, you know what? They're right. I got to give it a shot.
I don't know where that line is either. And if somebody tells you they do, you tell them I said they're full of shit. Okay? You don't know. I don't know. Nobody knows. Vince McMahon doesn't know. If he did, he would be a lot wealthier than he is right this minute. But he doesn't know. And like I say, I don't know either. That's the thing. You know, you hear me talk about promotion 101 or something like that. There is such a thing. But there is no cut and dried. This is the only way to get somebody over. This is the only way to, you know, to make money. There is nothing like that. Because in our business, it don't fly. It don't fly, man. And it's not going to, no matter who thinks they're the smartest human being on the face of God's green earth or whatever. It's, you know, it's trial and error. It is trial and error. I have, like I say, I have seen, you know, guys put together that you thought were going to do land office business, right? And could, didn't draw anything, you know, but you have part of it too, you know, part of this whole thing of not, is Reigns over, is he not over, you know, or we get into all that crazy discussion and so forth. But you know, part of the underlying thing that nobody saw about is how it was done, which has a lot to do with it as well. You know, it's not so much this guy is not over, that guy is over. It's how you, how the, you know, the crazy thing is, when I was with WWE, you hear them all the time, perception is reality, perception is reality. Well, my perception is you're doing a very bad clown show, and that is the reality of it. And, you know, it's, they don't see it apparently, but the point is, if you're just, you know, if it becomes apparent that, well, Les is pouting because we don't like who he's putting over. So, you know, you're less apt to go with the flow than you would be if you didn't sense that with me. Wouldn't you think?
I completely agree with you.
So there's the deal. You know, there's no cut and dry. There's nothing that's set in stone. You know, and when you think there is, you're in trouble, my friend. You are in trouble.
Well, it sounds like we're both in agreement that wherever that line is, and it's kind of nebulous, Vince is on the wrong side of it at this particular point in time.
Well, you know, and part of that, I think, maybe even more now than even before, is there are a lot of yes men there. One of the reasons I'm probably not there anymore is my, or will never be there again, is because I don't know how to do that. I am not a politician in that sense. I think, you know, because of my tenure in the business. And as again, that I, not that I'm right all the time either, but, you know, I think I've earned the right to, you know, if the answer should be no, then that's the answer. You know, I've told a few guys that I've worked for over the years, look, if this is just about me telling you you're right, say so. You know, that'd make it a lot easier on me too. You know, then I'll just tell you you're right. How's that? Or, I've told a couple guys that work, listen, you know, I'm going to save you a lot of time. If that's all you want from me is to tell you how intelligent you are, hell, you know, send me the check. I'll stay home. You stay home. I'll call you once a week and blow smoke. Save us both a lot of time.
Let me ask you a question about Daniel Bryan.
Okay.
In the piece, Dave mentions that Daniel Bryan does not fit into the traditional categories of what people would expect a draw to be or look like. He doesn't check all the boxes on an appearance level, for sure. Especially not in Vince McMahon's mind. But with respect to all the promoters and the bookers that you worked with over the course of your wrestling and behind-the-scenes career as a guy who helped write television, who called matches, who ran his own promotion, did you ever come across, or do you think at least, because maybe you can't really answer it definitively, but was there ever a guy as over in spite of what wasn't being put behind him as Daniel Bryan was in your day?
Oh, yeah.
Who didn't eventually say, you know what, we're going to have to get behind him.
You know, I don't know if anybody ever thought not. I'm going to talk about a former tag team partner of mine, God rest his soul, Whitey Caldwell, who is probably in no way, shape, or form the guy that you know, even back then, that you would have picked to been the top babyface in your territory, right? But this guy was nothing but pure friggin' money for the Knoxville territory when John Kazan owned it. He and I were tag team partners, and I'll tell you the truth. When John first suggested putting us together, you got to realize back in the day too. One of the things is that you weren't extremely interested in being partners with one of the local boys, because usually local boys weren't all, you know, because they hadn't traveled, they hadn't had a chance to work with a lot of top guys. They weren't that good, you know. And Whitey never went anywhere. Whitey had a job up in the Tri-Cities, Kingsport, John City, Bristol area, had his family there. But he and Ron Wright had become, you know, sort of legend in their battles there. But anyway, once I saw Whitey work, when John had said, you know, boy, I think I can put you and Whitey Caldwell together and make money with you. Once I saw Whitey work, I was in. I said, yeah, let's do this. Because he was that good. But, you know, he wasn't a big guy. He was probably, I'm going to guess at best, he may have scaled 200 pounds, you know, if at all. And I'm not sure he ever weighed 200 pounds. But I was witness to it. I mean, this guy, I don't know how many world champions he worked with there, but I know during our time together, he worked with Dory for the title in Knoxville. And I'm going to tell you right now, I was there and watched the whole damn thing. There was nobody in that building that, of course, and Park realized, too, that this, you know, a lot of the credit goes to Dory himself, who was an amazing champion, an amazing worker, and knew how to put guys over. But before that, you know, before Dory ended up stealing the match at the end, there was nobody in that building who didn't believe Whitey Caldwell was going to win that damn title and bring it home to Knoxville. And that was the kind of support we got. You know, I say we got. He was as instrumental in getting me over as I was in helping him stay over, I guess you might say, because he was already over before I got there. But, you know, he was not your traditional babyface. You know, he was, like I say, not a big guy, didn't have a great tan, but he was over like $1 million, like $1 million.
So he was a guy who no promoter would have tabbed as the guy.
No.
But he just had that it, and the promoter said, despite all that, we're going with it.
Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah, and I'm not sure what that is either, Vic. You know, it is it with different people. That's what I think a lot of people don't understand. I don't know if sometimes I wonder if people in the business even understand it. Because, you know, it is, you know, different, I think, with everybody. I don't know that it is a thing. It's, you know, Steve Austin had it. But then, when he was title that Vince gave him?
The Ringmaster.
The Ringmaster, yeah.
Now, there was no hint of it as the Ringmaster.
No. And I think that's part of it, too. You know, when we're talking about Roman, you know, everybody talks about the hokey promos and that sort of thing. My question would be, I don't know the answer because I don't know Roman. Maddie would probably know his brother. Rosie would probably know his brother better than anybody. But, you know, I'm going to guess that one of the things that he's not over is that the promos don't ring true. And so that's part of him not being over, you know. With Whitey, Whitey wasn't a big guy. Whitey was my height, and like I say, maybe 195 pounds. Pale White didn't have a tan, he was in shape, but he didn't have, you know, he had more of a runner's physique, you know, he wasn't heavily muscled. But I think with Roman, part of it, again, as I said earlier, it's not all about the guy. It's sometimes about the way the guy is programmed, is presented, is showcased, or isn't, for that matter, you know. And I think with Roman, the silly interviews and the fact that he's not, I think, you know, from what I understand, Brian carried him well in their match, and which is, you know, is part of a guy's job too. But again, I see a big upside for this kid, but I just don't see it tomorrow. And I hope Lesnar's going to stay around because I don't think Reigns should beat him.
See, I'm with you on that. I would actually book Lesnar to win. And do the whole, not bottom to the top, but just, you know, put Roman on a mission for 6 months to a year before they wrestle again.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be my thought. I mean, again, like I said, you want to help get him over, you know. And there's, when I say this, it's not what I'm about to say or what I said earlier is not the end all be all. It's like, well, if you don't do it my way, it won't work at all. But, you know, by having partnered him up as and make him a stronger babyface, covering Daniel Bryan's back and helping Daniel ascend to where everyone thinks he belongs, you know, and then getting the shot and Daniel backing him then, I think would be more apt to get him. Plus the seasoning. Well, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day, you know, Flair celebrated his 66th birthday this week. And they were asking me about my history with Rick, and he is a friend. And, you know, I was one of the first guys to work with him when he came to the Carolinas, and he'd just been in the business a year. And so I spent a lot of time around him. And, you know, they were saying, well, you know, they showed him videos of Buddy Rogers. They put him with Rip Hawk, who was a great heel, and to help season him. And you guys worked with him on promos. Exactly. You know, he was brought along slowly, and you know, he had a lot of natural talent, so he probably came along faster than the average guy might. But all facets. But in the final analogy, it was Richard Fleur, Ric Flair, Nature Boy Ric Flair, whatever. It was his, you know, when he opened his mouth, when he promoed, when he worked, it was him working. It was his promo. It wasn't mine. It wasn't George Scott's. It wasn't Rip Hawk's. He took, you know, he was smart enough to take the things from other people that worked well for him and discard those things that didn't, you know? I tell kids a lot of times, you ever seen Ric Flair dropkick? No. You know why? You don't want to. He doesn't throw a good dropkick. But he's smart enough not to do that, you know? With all due respect to John Cena, if he paid attention to his own matches, he'd never throw another punch. But
You're right.
You know? So it's, you know, it comes down to the minor things. That brings me to something, you know, that I had mentioned to you I wanted to touch on here, too. Little things are so important. One of the things I work on with these kids now that when I started training people 20 years ago, I probably didn't pay much attention to either, because with me, it wasn't taught. It was just something you did. And that's facial expressions and body language. Those little things make the other things significant, make the other things work. And I think what's lacking in our business virtually across the friggin' board today is what I've seen this week on The Voice and American Idol. You know, I enjoy the blind auditions on Voice more because the banter between the judges and, you know, who they get to pick. But the part is, they have to be drawn to that person's voice. It can't be because it's a hot-looking chick or the guy looks like he's marketable because he's handsome and has good hair or anything like that. They don't turn a chair around unless they sense something in the person's singing style. But across the board, whether it's Jennifer Lopez and that group on Idol, or whether it's Pharrell Williams and, you know, Blake Shelton and those guys and girls on The Voice, the bottom line is, if we can't feel you, if you don't make us believe what you're doing, you're not going to be here long. You know what? Turn that around and make it about sports entertainment, professional wrestling, or whatever. It's the same, and it's lacking in our business. This blind audition on The Voice started this week, and this young lady from Nashville, I forget what the song was, but she killed it. And she had Pharrell Williams and Adam Levine on their feet, in their chairs, bopping, right? She had me into it. I think I mentioned to you last week, if you watch the Stevie Wonder special, Lady Gaga did Living for the City and tore it up. Everybody in that auditorium was into it. I mean, others, and the point is, other singers were into it, right? That's even more telling than the fans buying into it. You know, when Benoit and Regal drew me and everybody else that was in the business in that building in the year 2000 at Schmidt Fieldhouse at St. Xavier here in Cincinnati, that was more telling than the 2,000 fans that were into it. And that's what's lacking. I don't care if it's the worst independent show on God's green earth or whether it's WWE, TNA, or Ring of Honor. That is what is lacking in this business today. That reaching out and touching people where they live.
And part of that is, as you talked about with Roman, those are not his words.
Right.
I'm gonna put a capsule or put a bow on that, and then we'll answer some questions.
Okay.
For me, I talked about how that theme, or at least that idea, reverberates through the piece a couple of different times in a couple of different ways, that you'd rather have a professional book writer write the book from start to finish than folks who don't really understand what book writing is all about. The whole push-pull between Vince and the fans and what they want and what he believes is best for his business. To me, now we're just talking about these two guys, Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns. I'm not saying Daniel Bryan versus anybody else on the roster or Reigns versus anybody else on the roster. These two guys is where you were at this past Sunday. The reason Daniel Bryan was the better option isn't because there's, you know, Daniel Bryan's not the right guy because there's some push-pull between the fans and Vince is going to show people how his business is done and he's the professional here and you guys are just fans and I know what you want better than you want, so I'm going to go my way because I'm the guy in the business and you're not and you'll get over it. That's not why Daniel Bryan was the better choice. Daniel Bryan was the better choice because a great coach always puts his players in the best possible position to win. He prepares them well, and he puts them in the best spot for them to succeed. And on the surface, Roman Reigns has got the world at his feet thanks to Vince McMahon, with this main event coming up in a month. But he's not as well prepared to succeed as he could be or as he should be. So between the two of them, the best option is Daniel Bryan, not because you're falling victim, in Vince's mind, to what the fans want, but because you put the guy who's in the best position to succeed in the spot until the next guy is best prepared to succeed. Period.
Can I get a witness? Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It's true. You know, it is a fact. Well, you know, and the other thing
that's the thing that bothers me less is that, like you said, you see so much upside in him. And I trust you because you've got 55 years of experience backing you up. My thing is, if he's got so much upside and can be all these things that you think he can be, why are you – I mean, I understand why – actually, I'm not going to say why you're rushing it. You're rushing it because you see it. I'm sure Vince sees it. You see it. Everybody can see it. But if it's not where it could be or where it should be to drive the train here or get the keys to the company, then nurture it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Don't just say, all right, here are the keys, kid. Figure out how to drive a stick. Teach him how to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to. It's so relevant. Yeah. Well, you know, that's, you know, again, it comes back to, you know, this guy is this. And that's one of the things. It's not necessarily, you can say it's Vince, you can say he's got the final say, so you can say whatever you want, and the people get on the board and write 4,000 derogatory remarks about me. But it comes down to this. I don't care if you are a script writer, I don't care if you're Vince McMahon or Triple H. What you need to do is feel who this person is and improve that, not decide that you want to make them something because they're the right height or the right color or the right, you know what I'm saying? That's crazy. It makes no sense. That makes no sense to me, is you develop what they naturally are comfortable, because that lack of comfort or comfort, again, we've talked about this here before. You know, I'm not smart enough to tell you that I've researched this or that I'm a psychiatrist and understand this, but I have done thousands of interviews, holding the microphone for others, doing it myself, working with some of the best promo guys in the friggin' world who were never, they were given bullet points, but never told what to say and how to say it. Those that got over is because subconsciously to the viewers, they rang true. When Wahoo McDaniel told you to kick somebody's ass, you went to the bank with that. It wasn't you. Really? You think he can do that? That was never the question, you know, or Dusty or Piper or Flair or Mulligan or any of the guys that were great promos. And some of the guys that weren't necessarily great promos, you know, great speakers, still they cut their promos from the heart and it came across as believable and real.
The thing that burns me, I think, the most about Reigns, because you guys see so much promise and potential in him, those of you who've been in the business for a long time, I think what bugs me is that whole coach analogy about putting him in the best position to win.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, this kid could be your future, and I feel like they're failing him. we've had too many stops. You can't do the stop start, whatever, you know, a half-hearted, and this is not half-hearted, I shouldn't say it like that, but I mean, they've messed up so many guys, and this is a guy they're putting a lot of their eggs, if not all of them, in his basket, and yet in a whole completely different way, I feel like they're failing him. And it's just like, you can't do this like this. You're doing it again. Yeah. Don't do this.
Yeah, I agree. It certainly.
All right, so it's time to answer questions, Les, because I've now just depressed myself with the idea of Roman Reigns.
All right, good. Let's do that.
And I hope he doesn't. I hope he takes off like a rocket ship the day after WrestleMania and shuts us all up. That would be the best thing for all of us involved.
Yes, it would.
You can send us your questions anytime. I'm on the Twitter machine, at VS1067, or you can friend me on Facebook. Just type in my name, Victor Sosa, and send me a request. I'll get you in, and you can ask away. First question is, actually, the first two questions are holdovers from last week, Les, which I thought were kind of fun. If the Wrestling Observer existed in the 60s and 70s, Les Thatcher, what would Dave Meltzer have written about you as a worker, promo guy, and draw?
I have no idea. You know, because when I was working, that never crossed my mind. You know, what would a newspaper writer write about me? What would a, you know, the funny thing is when you did, were interviewed by a newspaper people, by legitimate people of the press, it was never, they didn't write wrestling, you know, just say, well, this guy's a good worker, right? Or this guy gets heat or this, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, if they came to the matches and saw that the crowd was receptive of you, or if you were healed that they booed you, well, then, you know, they would make comment, they would comment on that and make mention of that. But I don't know. I would hope, I feel that, and this is with no disrespect to anyone, I feel I was as technically sound as anybody, you know, and I would have hoped that would have been something that was said about me, you know, that I was smooth in the ring, I would hope and versatile, that I was able to do what was, you know, what the particular booker or promoter in a particular territory asked of me, but I was able to get guys over when that was needed. I was able to get myself over when that was needed. That I came to do business and, you know, put that first. So I'd hope that would be, the comments, you know, about me. As far as a draw, you know, I drew money. In some places I was never given the opportunity, and I don't know that I would have drawn every, you know, there were places I was a mid-card guy. There was places, of course, when I, you know, much younger that I was an underneath card guy. There were places I worked on top in the Carolinas, worked on top, briefly in Georgia, worked on top down along the Gulf Coast, Louisiana, you know, and, of course in Knoxville. You know, I just like, you know, to be known that I was a solid worker, who was able to do what was, you know, he was asked to do and do it properly, I guess. I'm not sure.
Second part of this question gave me a chuckle. What behind-the-scenes scandals would Les have been involved in that would have made it into a newsletter? Because, Les, I expect you to out yourself right now.
Well, of course, I will let me do that, too. You sent me that question. I don't know that I was involved in any, you know, I just came to do my... I tried to forego that, and I think we've talked about, you know, guys getting in public trouble, like Seth Rollins with his girlfriend sending out the nudes and that sort of thing. You know, I always try to keep my nose clean. There were times that I probably created a little furor that I probably shouldn't have. But I don't know that I was ever in a scandal that was newsworthy to the business. I hate to seem boring, and not being able to give whoever asked the question their answer, but I don't know that I was ever involved in anything like that. Maybe I was boring. Maybe I'm misinformed. But I don't know of any scandals that I was part of. I thought about it. You know, I thought about it. So hell, nothing that I'm aware of. You know, maybe the war in Knoxville, the fact that I was in the office there when that went down. Well, I was in the office in Atlanta during the war there But I mean, I wasn't a major factor one way or the other, I don't think. I would say in Knoxville, our TV was head and shoulders over the opposition's TV, and I was responsible for that, and I'm proud to say so. But I don't think, I don't think I had any significant impact, any more than, than anybody else, because I wasn't a major player in the ring at that point in time. I was more producing television and things like that. I don't know. Damn, I'm boring. Let me apologize.
We'll have to, you know what? We're going to have to get Jerry Briscoe back on the show. We'll ask him.
Oh, my God.
About you.
Well, I can tell you right now, if you get Terry Funk, he'll make up something if there was. No,
I know one of the stories he'll make up.
Yeah, me too. And it's all a lie. So, yeah, maybe I should say that Dave would say I was boring when we go back to the question before this one, because I wasn't involved in any controversies. I don't know.
All right. Now, another question, kind of about the Observer. When Dave started gaining some attention with his newsletter in the 80s, and it was called a dirt sheet and various other terms that may be considered negative, how did you personally feel about the Observer at that time?
You know, I was never made aware of the Observer. I forget who had it. We were on the road. I had driven to Knoxville from up here, and we were going to do Smokey TV somewhere. And for the life of me, I do not remember. Anyway, but I was in the car with a couple other guys, and they started talking about the Observer. And this would have been, the late 80s or early 90. 89, 90, somewhere in there. I was unaware of the damn thing until then, because I remember saying, "What's the Observer? What are you guys talking about? You don't, I know." Huh? And then somebody, I wasn't at all taken back by it, quite frankly. There was a guy named, I was trying to think of this the other day when I knew you were going to ask this question. I can't remember his name. They called him Uncle somebody or other, and I think he was from around Northern California. But anyway, this I'm talking about back when fan clubs were the thing, right? And my fan club president corresponded with this guy. I wish I could think of his name. I'm sure Meltzer will remember him, if so, to bring it up to Dave. This guy was kind of the forerunner, maybe, in as much as he was probably the first guy to get results from all around the country and print them in a news. It was back then; they weren't called dirt sheets, just newsletters. But he had a fan, I forget what his fan club was. I don't know if it was for a particular person or whether he just did a newsletter for about professional wrestling in general, and basically his subscribers were a lot of fan club members and fan club presidents and that sort of thing. But I remember seeing and realizing that one of the things that was kind of that he was, and I don't know that he set out to let the cat out of the bag, as it were. You could find out that the guy who was supposedly had his leg broken in the Carolinas was actually now at this point wrestling in Texas, right? And so that was kind of the first situation where, whoops, and of course, and back then I think it was far more relevant. But when I first heard of the Observer, I didn't have much, one way or the other, honestly. Dave and I think first physically met, if I'm correct, at, Pillman's funeral. It's the first time that we ever actually spoke and became acquaintances and I hope to say friends. I always looked at it like, where does he get this information? If there's a reason to be pissed off at somebody, maybe it's people give him the information. You can only trash me, Vic, if I give you, or someone else gives you the ammunition to do that, right?
Yeah.
So You know, I honestly, once Vince let the cat out of the bag totally, you know, when he decided he didn't want to pay commission taxes where it was, Jersey or somewhere, Pennsylvania, wherever it was, and said, well, you know, this is all prearranged and this and that. I find it funny that years later I've had people say, well, you know, Les Thatcher, you know, talks. Les Thatcher has never, the business has been trashed way before Les Thatcher ever opened his mouth. The one thing that I find that I wasn't a turnoff for me in that respect was the fact that since the cat is out of the bag or the train has left the station or whatever, the genie's out of the bottle, whatever, you know, now I can, you know, in detail tell you why you should respect my business and why what we do is one of the hardest damn things there is in the world in terms, whether it's sports or entertainment or whatever the hell it is you want to call it, to do it and do it right, let me reemphasize, do it right, is not an easy task, and there are damn few people that can do it like that. There's a handful that are that talented. You know, where years ago we weren't capable of doing that, you know. Now I can say, well, come over to where I train these guys and take a few bumps and let me know what you think. You know, or realize here's how we do this. Try it yourself sometime and see what you think. You know, and years ago you couldn't do that. So if there's an upside to letting the genie out of the bottle, if that's the expression, that would be it, I think.
All right, Les, Stevie J's been waiting a week to ask this question, and he
Hello?
Thinks you're the only man who can answer it.
Huh?
And he thinks you're the only man prepared to answer this
question.
That's scary. Has to do with storytelling in the ring. See, going back to the territory days when feuds took months or even longer to build than that, fans saw the progression from week to week, frustration of their heroes, or the joy of the villains in the ring. And it built up over a long time. Performers drew it out, but so did the audience to some degree. Now, these days, even though shows like Impact or NXT, even Ring of Honor and Lucha Underground are taping now, and the shows will air over a period of months. They're taping 3-4 shows in one night. So, Les, in your opinion, can wrestlers still emotionally connect with an audience when they have to compress an entire angle and a whole range of reactions to something that takes months to sort of generate organically into one night of tapings? And can the audience tell that it didn't progress over time?
I think this, that's there's two sides to that particular story. You obviously can't get that point across. Well, if you have talented people, you can the live audience that's there for all these tapings, you can still generate some believability and some serious heat with them. Because you can make them forget that what you're doing is only taking 4 hours instead of 4 months or 4 weeks or whatever. I think, but your mindset should be more toward, the viewing audience. Because I know somebody, one of the dirt sheets will tell me, you know, that you taped all four of these shows in the same night. But the point is they're seeing them, you know, one at a time. So your focus should be more on convincing them opposed. It's not that you shouldn't try to convince the live audience. Yeah, there's a big disconnect with that. It's a problem. I know we did that with Smokey. And you could see, well, especially we taped on Mondays. So especially during the school year, they bring their kids. The kids had to be home to go to school, so the crowd would start to get thinner as the night wore on. Plus, the boys get tired. You know, that's part of it, too. It's not just, is the audience going to believe? You know, the guys are, it's a long day. It's a long day for the guys in the ring. And so that becomes a part of the equation, whether you want it to or you don't. You know, and it's not whether this guy doesn't work hard or that guy. They can all work as hard as they know how. But still, they're putting in, you know, four matches or whatever. So yeah, it's a tough road. It's a tough road to hoe. And but to me, as I said, I would work to the viewing audience. Or when I say you obviously want to try and sell the fans that are in the building. But your main focus should probably, you know, you're telling a story. You realize, you know, that you're doing it all at once. But these people at home who aren't coming, somebody's going to say, well, you know, the people that are there will tell their friends. Well, they will tell their friends, but they're not going to tell the entire viewing audience. So your best thing to do is to work to those people, or, you know, and try to make them believe it and buy into it. But it's tough. I know it's a cost saving thing, but it's also costly in terms of your in-house audience getting tired and being less receptive four shows in than they were at the very beginning.
So it's doable, but definitely more difficult than it would be if you were doing it on a week-to-week basis.
Absolutely. And as a commentator on that, like when Cottle and I did it, or Dutch and I did it, or Ross and I, it's wearing on everybody. You know, it's wearing on the guy booking, it's wearing on the referees, it's wearing on the wrestlers, it's wearing on the commentators, too. It's a shame that you have to do it that way. But, and I know there's several little companies that are doing it that way for a cost-cutting thing now, too. But it has its negatives and its downside. It definitely does.
Ed's got a question that kind of piggybacks off of that. Taking advantage of your experience as...
I don't know why it crossed my mind. I want to tell my Australian friend that I wasn't trashing Ole Anderson last week. I was just telling a story. If I see Ole and Charlotte, if I'm not going to Mobile this year, if I saw him there, I'd sit down and talk to him. We have a pleasant conversation. Past is past. I was just telling a story. I wasn't Ole Anderson, one of the damn best heels I ever worked with in my life, and was a damn smart booker. You know, now he's not Mr. Sociable by any stretch of the imagination. But that wasn't what he was hired for. So I just want to say, you know, to Mel Gibson, I wasn't trashing Ole. I was just telling a story. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No problem. Piggybacking off that last question, with your experience of producing and editing TV wrestling shows, did you ever have to do multiple week tapings for any promotion? And what were your personal thoughts and experiences doing them, especially with handling crowd burnout by the taping of, say, the third or fourth episode?
Well, you know, I think we just kind of covered that too. It's tough. You know, you try to crank the crowd up. You get up and try to be a cheerleader and say, you know, hey, let's get into this game. You know, we're getting ready to start. You know, 3, 2, 1. You know, let's hear from you. You know, it's tough. The editing. I've been involved in sitting in with the editor, you know, people doing the cut ups and editing and stuff. I never physically, you know, ran the machines myself. My friend Nigel does quite a bit of editing and is very good at it, quite frankly. But you know, it's that, that's talk about little minute things and exacting is the person doing the editing. But, you know, when you do anything in large, I would guess, well, Mick Foley wrote his first book in 6 weeks longhand on legal tablets because my friend Mick is so tight he didn't want to fix his typewriter, which was broken at the time, or some crazy story that he tells. But, you know, I imagine the great authors like James Patterson and James Lee Burke and guys that I read probably don't sit down and write the book front to back in one sitting. You know, in fact, I almost guarantee they don't, because they have burnout too. So I think the same thing applies to everybody that's involved in a, like a, if it's a four week shoot, one night, you're going to get burnout from the wrestlers, as I said earlier, referees, commentators, the bookers, then the guys who are doing the editing have got to sit down and, you know, you try to do it all, in one sitting, or at least, you know, as close proximity of getting done with show one as you do as with show four as you do show one, simply, you know, while you mentally have a flow to it. And so it's taxing on everybody, I think. You know, the amazing thing, of course, WWE has such a huge staff of production people. I was so impressed when I went up to do the special on Ambrose and Reigns and Seth and those guys to get a walk. I'd never been in the production center. Man, I mean, they've got such a great setup, multi-million-dollar operation, and they have a lot of people. So, you know, and the fact that they turn out these little segments in overnight and stuff is just really, really, you know, a tribute to the technical people. It's a tough grind. It really is to sit and write. When we were trying to put together the wrestling news magazine that was that we were selling back in the mid '80s, into different stations around the country, I sat down and just in my apartment, in my office, in my apartment, and tried to lay out 13 weeks, you know, going into this with the thought that, you know, it would be go, and we'd, you know, to lay out 13 weeks worth of shows on paper was just mind-boggling at times too. So, you know, I think the bigger the task in that situation, you know, it comes down to a 3-hour Raw, you know, which is tough. You know, again, we knock the writers, we knock Vince, we knock whoever that makes the decisions. But to do as much television as they do in the course of a week is numbing at some point in time. You know, with I've always thought that with bookers, you know, there's always burnout, and you'll tend to, because bookers run out, they go back to doing the same ideas over and over. And God knows these writers have gotten horribly bad about that. You know, I realize it doesn't make job security a strong thing, but let's say you got a dozen writers, put six of them on Raw, six of them on SmackDown, let them be creative over and above what Triple H or Stephanie or Vince want. I mean, to some degree, and then every so many weeks or every couple months or something, switch the six writers from Raw to SmackDown, the six writers from SmackDown to Raw, you know, and so that you get a different flow.
That's kind of like the old Jerry Lawler.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Well, you know, to me, when we did Race for the Ring in California, to get Nigel's input was refreshing for me at times, because, you know, we realized we had a year tournament. We had 32 wrestlers, and to sit down and piece this thing together, and there were times, you know, Nigel at first, he's like one of my kids, for Christ's sake. And, you know, he began his career with me, and we grew closer from booking this Race for the Ring thing. But when he first made suggestions, he was kind of hesitant, because I think his mind flashed back to trainer-student thing, right? And when I'd say, I like that, let's do it. And he'd look at me like, really? You know? I think that's when you respect somebody's mind and you realize that you yourself get bogged down, you know, occasionally. You hear the stories of writer's block, that this guy had X number of successful novels and all of a sudden he can't write a thing, or a screenwriter the same way. It's, you know, our business is a different business from anything in the world, but still, if you're writing shows and making storylines and shoot, you know, hot angles and stuff, at some point you're going to get burned out. So I think as best you can to refresh those people and give them a little mental rest and put them back to work is beneficial to the your company, to the business overall.
We've answered every question in the queue, so if you want to send us some questions for next week, you'll be at the top of the list. I'm on Twitter at VS1067, and the guy I have a whole lot of heat with right now is at Les Thatcher, because he has more followers than I do.
I don't know why. I really don't know why. I swear. You know what? I want to say the one thing I found on Twitter is my name pops up there a lot. I had no idea until Greg Price signed me up for this thing. But for those who have given me accolades and positive comments, God bless you and thank you so much. It's nice to know that with all the negativity that I receive from some of the real experts, that people like Jim Ross and Jim Cornette and Lance Storm and Tom Pritchard actually think I might be able to slap my ass with both hands and know what I'm doing once in a while.
Hey, you know what? While you just dropped a few of those names, I want you to talk a little bit more about some of those guys who you're going to be working with in Charlotte, because for those of you who are listening to the first time as new subscribers or freeloaders today, there are a couple of opportunities to work with Les that are coming up. In fact, one that's a weekly opportunity in Les's home city, and one later this summer in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah.
So let everybody know about that.
I'm doing three training sessions a week at the Christian Wrestling Association International's warehouse in Hamilton, Ohio, which is not a suburb of Cincinnati. The people who live in Hamilton probably get mad if I said that, but it's like, you know, 30 minutes from my front door. And we train Tuesday night and Thursday nights at 6 o'clock. We train Saturday mornings at 10. And, you can email me, les@epwt.com or Les Thatcher at Zoomtown if you're interested in the area. We've had some guys come in from Tennessee, some guys coming in from Pennsylvania at some point to do training with us, and, of course, guys from the area. If you have experience, I think I can help make you better. If you're just a beginner, we can, you know, we work from beginners to guys with experience are more than welcome. Charlotte is... And I still book out, I wanted to mention, for weekend training camps, and I hope to go back to all the places, NWA Smokey and Antonio Thomas and Deep Southern Championship Wrestling and the Monster Factory and on, you know, the places that I almost have yearly schedules with now to work with those guys. Charlotte is just going to be amazing this year, I think. The trainers from last year, Tom Pritchard, Lance Storm, Nigel McGinnis, myself, Jerry Briscoe, bouncing in and out with his other duties and assignments while he's there, and added this year will be Rip Rogers, the Hustler, who has been a mainstay in Ohio Valley Wrestling for years and is an amazing trainer. But you can work with us for 4 days. We're going to add some new twists this year. Dr. Tom and I have talked. I think we're going to take one of the four sessions and work strictly on tag team psychology, and how to build a real tag team match, not two single matches, and how to set up for hot tags and that sort of thing, because Lance and Doc and I, all three, have spent a lot of time with, you know, being major part of tag teams over the years. And then the other thing is, with the Q&A sessions in the afternoon, we want to add some video work, you know, like I mentioned earlier, Benoit Regal, and some of the older stuff to show the kids, you know, how the stories were told. That's one thing that never gets, you know, that has no age on it, whether it's 1963 or 2015. Telling a story is telling a story. Anyway, Charlotte, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, July the 30th through August the 2nd. We train in the morning. We arrive at 7 a.m. We start training at 8. We finish at noon. Break for lunch. We do a Q&A session each afternoon where we're trying to try to add the videos as well. Show Saturday night and Sunday afternoon. You're going to work with all level of talent. Last year we had people in from Scotland, England, Canada, all over the United States. We had guys under contract to Ring of Honor, NWA, who are, you know, already pretty advanced, and yet they were on board to learn more and to better themselves. Also, this chance to receive the $2,500 Reed Flair Memorial Scholarship, which is given each year. And I want to shout out to my dear friend Jesse Kay, who we awarded that money to last year. It's nice to know, you know, when you pick somebody, to realize almost a year later that, wow, we picked the right person. After I saw her there in July and August, she showed up at the Monster Factory when I was there in September. She had started in the business in Delaware. I'm not sure with who. She moved down to Charlotte, spent several months in Charlotte living with relatives there to work with George South and to get a chance to work with Tessa Blanchard and the group there. She is currently just moved to Florida to work with at 3D Academy. So she is, you know, it's like, okay, she's a workhorse and she's trying to better herself, and God bless her. And she had emailed me and told me she's going to be in Charlotte this year too.
So, awesome.
Yeah, so we absolutely picked the right person to award the $2,500 to. But it's also a chance. It's $319 for the 4 days. That gets you into the Hall of Heroes banquet on Friday night, all the Q&A sessions. They are doing the premiere of Mid-Atlantic Memories, which is Greg Price's documentary, which he's been filming for 2 years. I know I'm in some small part, I'm going to be involved in that. I say you're going to be able to network with other independent wrestlers. You'll be seen by independent promoters. You get a chance to work on the Saturday Night Show or the Sunday Afternoon Show. Jerry Briscoe is a legitimate WWE scout. Dr. Tom, Lance, and myself, and Rip have all trained WWE talent over the years. So, you know, if you want to be seen, if you want to improve yourself, and you want to have a good time, please join us. You can go to Mid-Atlantic Legends, NWA Legends, .com and get all the information and sign up. But it's a great time, and it's an amazing learning experience for those who are trying to learn this business and learn it right.
And by the way, when you get to MidAtlanticLegends.com or NWALegends.com, because either address will get you there, you have the opportunity to take advantage of still some discounted room rates, discounted airfare. What was the other thing? Oh, for those of you who might just be coming in for the weekend to enjoy it as a fan, you know, there's that VIP price, the VIP ticket that gets you to the Hall of Heroes and the other Q&As and the Jim Cornette Experience taping, which is going to be going on live there at the Fan Fest.
We had a lot of fun with that last year. Lance, Tom, Shane Helms, myself, I think Nigel, we were all on the Cornette Experience live. I don't know if they're going to do iPay-per-views this year or not, but last year they did iPay-per-view, well, the 2 years before with Hall of Heroes as well. And then they did the matches on Saturday night and Sunday afternoon, and the Cornette Experience as well.
Yeah, and there are also, for those of you who, for whatever reason, are not able to do the whole weekend but still want to see some of the vendors and the guests and get autographs, maybe some memorabilia and what have you, there are going to be day passes available for each day at the Fan Fest as well.
Yeah. You know what I like, too? It's informal to the degree where if I'm walking down the hall, some fan says, Les, can I get a picture with you? Sure, man, come on. You know, and then they'll stop talk. Some fans that, yeah, I remember, you know, you wrestled so-and-so in 1975 and, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, so it's not just an organized thing, but there's also photo sessions, autograph sessions, as I mentioned, Q&A. Two years ago, I think it was, or three, whatever it was, I hosted a Q&A session with Wrestling 2 Johnny Walker. I know last year they had Tully Blanchard and Magnum TA talking about their feud and the cage matches and that sort of thing, you know. There's something going on all the time, from the time you get up in the morning to the time you go to bed, if you go to bed at night. And for me, it's a chance to see a lot of people. Last year I hadn't seen Wildfire Tommy Rich in years and years, and we had a chance to share a couple beers. I met Wes Briscoe we had talked on the phone. I had planned to use Wes in a tournament in L.A. until he'd signed with TNA, and then, of course, he and his dad and I have been close friends for years. So I got a chance to meet Wes and Mike Mooneyham from the Charleston newspaper, who's been a lifelong fan and a good friend. And you know, it's more like family reunion than it is a convention, honestly.
Now, Les, at the end of last week's show, you were going off to lift weights, and I was going off to make cheesecake.
Okay. I lifted weights. Did you make cheesecake?
I not only did I make cheesecake, I ate cheesecake.
Well, I want to tell you, my wife started yesterday. It does it in a slow cooker. She makes white chicken chili.
Mmm.
And so I'm going to have that when I get back from... I usually have a protein shake when I get back from the gym. I'm going to head to there pretty soon here. But I'm going to have some white chicken jelly when I get back. How was the cheesecake?
Cheesecake was awesome. I tell you, I was into that whole Quest Nutrition thing.
Right.
And using some of the stuff and some of the recipes that are on their website,
right,
which utilizes some of their products, which is protein-based. And it ended up, you know, usually when you see a lot of those stuff, you expect it to be a little bit dry and not taste all that great. And it's just something to get you through. But it was really good.
Right. Cool. Good. Excellent. Glad to hear it.
So this week you're going to lift weights, and I'm going to go make brownies.
What are you putting in the brownies? Come on, spit it out. Tell me.
You know what? I got to look the thing up, but there's definitely protein powder in it.
That wasn't what I was thinking about, but anyway.
Oh, how dare you, Les Patch. I'm too young for those.
Yeah, I know. It's me too. All right. Before Doc has a coronary, take us out of here. I know we've overshot our time anyway.
He is the legend Les Thatcher. My name is Victor Sosa. We may or may not be consuming those kind of brownies between now and next week, but I promise you one of us at least will make it back here for Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. We'll talk to you again next week.